Welcome to the First Time Facilitator Podcast. Whether you're a first time facilitator or a seasoned pro, listen in for tips and tricks to make a bigger impact at the next workshop you deliver. And now, your host. She's obsessed with sparkling water, so refreshing, Leanne Hughes.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm your host, Leanne Hughes, and I'm here to help you create unpredictable workshop experiences that predictably work. Now, last week on the show, we had Beth Wonson, and she was talking all about feedback, how employees really want feedback for growth, how managers don't feel comfortable giving it, and how we can learn from the feedback that we're given in workshops, as well as balancing the feedback that we are given and who we get it from. Now, this week, we're focusing on two of my favorite catchphrases on this show, unpredictability, of course, and contrast. My guest today epitomizes both. This is a masterclass episode in how to do things differently in your workshops. And I'm not saying that lightly. Honestly, there are about 10 ideas in this podcast that you can use or share with your company or anyone running events, workshops, presentations to immediately create audience engagement. My guest today is Johnny Quinn from Audience Alive. Raised and educated in Ireland, Johnny arrived in Dubai in 1996, determined to make the difference between presentations that fall flat and that seal the deal. After several years with Philips in the Middle East, he started Audience Alive Dubai, and then in 2015 expanded the operation to beautiful Queenstown, New Zealand. He's been a DJ, a postman, van driver, theatre technician, cameraman, engineering manager, business development manager, company owner, and today's podcast guest. And his burning desire is to travel to the top 10 beaches in the world. I'm hoping that Cable Beach in Western Australia is on that list. I think that's number one for me. Now, what I like about his perspective is his origin story. So Johnny worked behind the scenes at these events, and he noticed that presenters were not putting their audience first. And I know that that's why you're here listening to this podcast, is that you want to find out more ways of creating engagement and putting your audience front and center. And this episode delivers. Johnny also delivers some very memorable analogies, one-liners, and expressions that you can use, well, as great reminders personally to I will be using them, but also if you want to influence people in trying to do things a little bit differently and also stepping up and being a bit brave when you take that risk. You'll love this episode. Before we jump in, you can always continue the conversation when the podcast is over by joining our community of over 1,300 facilitators in our free Facebook group called The Flip Chart. If you'd like to support the show and its creator, me, by buying me a coffee, you can do that over at buymeacoffee.com/Leanne Hughes. And of course, Johnny's contact details are linked to connect with him on LinkedIn. Reach out, let him know what you thought. That is all in the show notes for this one at firsttimefacilitator.com/episode171. Woo, I'm excited for you. Onto the show. I am super delighted to welcome onto the First Time Facilitator podcast, Johnny Quinn. Johnny, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, Leanne, it's awesome to be here and I love your work. So keep it up. Thank you very much.
Well, likewise. In fact, the reason I've reached out to you was I was listening into my friend's podcast, Presentation Boss, and they interviewed you. And I was like, oh my gosh, like some of these tips are amazing. I've got to bring this guy onto our show. So I'm already starting with knowing a lot about you. But for listeners that haven't heard of Johnny Quinn, who are you? What's the work that you do now?
Yeah, I'm an Irishman, born in Belfast in Northern Ireland, but moved over to the Middle East in 96 and spent 20 years working in conference and events in the Middle East. So, you know, lots of death by PowerPoint, although we're not supposed to be using that phrase these days. PowerPoint's not bad. It's the people using it who are bad. So we don't blame PowerPoint, but I've seen lots of bored audiences over my life and really sort of tried to build a business around getting the audience more engaged. So I want to be that person in the back end that kind of is helping you look good when you're up on stage. And that's an emotive statement to a lot of facilitators and presenters. You know, so really getting people working on how we can engage audiences, turning sort of monologues into dialogues, turning delegates into participants, you know, that sort of thing. So how do we get people more engaged who are out there in the audience? I mean, the audience are the reason why we had the event in the first place. So why are we forgetting about them? But I'm a father of two, my daughter, Cara and Aaron, and they're enjoying the life down here in New Zealand. We moved here in 2015 just to really turn a chapter in our life and move to another place. And we really moved down to Queenstown in the south of the South Island of New Zealand, and they're enjoying horse riding and motorbikes and all that kind of outdoor stuff. So love the outdoor life here, but one of the upsides of COVID has been the connections through Zoom and getting connected to people all around the world and remote working. And I'm really remote, as far away as you can go sort of from the world. I mean, the world's very top heavy. 10% of the world's population live above the equator, I'm told. So we're down here and we're getting connected to people all around the world at the moment. So it's awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely top heavy. You're right. Like even when I record these podcast interviews, it's usually like the morning shift and then I'll have a break and then it's the evening shift to get Europe on. It's funny that you talk about, gosh, what a change from the Middle East over to beautiful, lush Queenstown. What a mix. I'm very jealous. We'll have to pop some links to Queenstown in the show notes. It's the most amazing place. Now, Johnny, I love that phrase, moving from a monologue to a dialogue and just putting our audience front and center where they should be. That's the whole purpose behind this podcast is how do we get that engagement and the group involved in the conversation. Now, you've got some pretty compelling stats on meetings and the state that we're in now. I was wondering if you could share them with our listeners.
Yeah, I researched the market and looked at why audiences go to meetings or conferences or Zooms. Why are they actually coming along? And, you know, some of the stats are quite surprising. I mean, 70% of people come to a meeting to meet other people. It's not necessarily to, you know, to get information. They want to connect and they want to connect with other people. So, you know, why do we kind of make them sit in a seat or switch off all their cameras or not get involved, you know? So it's really about that involvement, about trying to create engagement is really what we're all about. Now, also Mark McCrindle, a statistician based in Australia, he did a 2017 review of business meetings, and I'm sure it's been updated since then. But, you know, the common number that jumped out of that was that 89% of your audience want you to dynamically change your message depending on how they vote during your presentation. There's a really scary one for presenters. So we can no longer present linearly. And if you think about it, why do we present linearly? Why do we start at slide number one and go slide number two and tell a story and move linearly through a story? Well, the origins of that and the origin of slides are actually your average carousel projector that your grandfather maybe showed you, your slide projection. So, you know, you couldn't easily jump from 1 to 24, but in PowerPoint, you can. You simply, when you're in slideshow mode, just hit number 24 on the keyboard and it'll jump to slide 24. And that led us to think, why do we create linear stories and why do we teach people to present linear stories when really our brains don't work that way? Audiences don't think that way. You may start talking about something and somebody says, oh, tell me about this or tell me about that. So what I teach and show and provide to my clients are slide decks that are completely dynamic. So dynamic or interactive slide decks. So we may have five slides at the start, which is the sizzle or the sets the scene, but then we'll have one slide, which is called a portal slide, which allows us to go in any direction. We use Zoom for PowerPoint. So it's called Summary Zoom in PowerPoint. And it puts up a whole range of blocks of all of your different sections in your presentation. So if you're a trainer or a facilitator and you've got a 450 slides, you normally go through over hopefully 2 days, not one. And, you know, you want to make those interactive. We teach people how to make that interactive. And there's nothing better than to watch an audience and feel the energy in a room when you ask an audience, here are 24 things we could talk about next. What do you want to do? Oh, everybody wants to take a break, you know, or, you know, and that's really where it was born out of, was watching interaction live at events. I came up with this concept of the non-linear presentation.
It's magic. And I can't believe, I mean, like 170 episodes of the podcast, and you're the first person to talk about breaking that mold of linear work. And I think we kind of do it. Like I know when I facilitate, I don't want to be wedded to my slides. And if things are going in a certain way, during the break, I'll like cut things out, I'll hide slides, but I'll still continue in that sequential order. Yeah. So probably a couple of things that pop up in that. Well, first of all, like not even having the awareness to do it. That's why we haven't done it. But this whole choose your own adventure style, for people that like a bit of certainty when you're presenting, you're in your comfort zone when you know, okay, I'll deliver this and then this will come next. So what you're suggesting is breaking that and actually being flexible. How do you get your presenters more comfortable with that idea of, okay, oh my gosh, we're going to go to 24 now. What do we do?
No, I sell it to them because fundamentally what they believe is that they have an element of fear. And as a facilitator or a presenter, you really want to have a sense of fear. I met a guy once who said, I have a fear of not public speaking. And I was like, well, that's not good, is it? I mean, like, so, you know, for the people who have a fear of public speaking, then that's good. We want to channel that energy into excitement, into getting our message across. But, you know, a lot of the fear is about having a monologue. A lot of people aren't aware of that, that their fear of monologuing, of being made to stand up there and deliver a constant stream. And that's what people tend to, that's the default. People tend to read their slides. Now, I can combat that fear by saying, we're not going to monologue, we're going to dialogue. You're going to ask a question. And, you know, we try to get people to ask questions, but they tend to be non-rhetorical. But if we have questions that actually get the audience actively involved, then we're creating that dialogue. And all of a sudden, all the fear goes away. So one of the biggest fears is that fear of the audience being a group of people who are faceless. And you might have heard some of the, you know, advice over years, consider them naked and all that sort of stuff. That's all bad news. What you want to consider is consider creating an engagement with them. So let's ask them, what do you want to talk about next? What do you want to get involved with? Number one, it establishes you as the expert in your field, because you're not going to throw up 20 different solutions when you don't know the answers to them. So you're going to be comfortable with it. And that's, you know, point number one is be comfortable about what you're talking about. Talk about what you've got experience in. But when you throw that up and ask them questions, the audience all lean forward. They all get engaged. They all absolutely switch on to it. So, and that's what people want. We want engagement, don't we? We want to maximize the engagement. For example, if you could imagine pointing a camera at a whole audience and you could define their demographics and you could also define their engagement levels by their how engaged they are their faces looking at the camera, are they actually engaged? So that's audience analytics. And can we do that? I think you might be surprised that we can, because that's certainly a concept that we've looked into. And if you walk up to any screen in a mall and ask yourself what's playing on it, the screen has looked at you, defined your demographic, and is playing content that's appropriate to you. So why can't we do that with an audience? Why can't we point a camera at an audience and say, we're going to look at your audience engagement level as we go through this meeting? And, you know, you could in theory smile to vote yes, or, you know, frown if you want to vote no. There's a whole load of different ways that we could do that. So those types of concepts are out there and we're thinking about them as we go along.
Yeah, I think the virtual setting is actually the perfect playground for this as well. Like you said, because we've got the tools all available, we don't need to have, we can use Slido and interactive tools to vote for what happens next. I'm very excited. Ever since hearing this idea about non-linear presentations and workshops, I'm going to bring it into some leadership workshops that I'm running in a couple of weeks. And they've got a workbook, but imagine, like, it's very unpredictable to say, right, we're going to start from, you voted, page 86. Oh, yeah, I love it.
Yeah, your content does need to be siloed into the individual modules. Parts. I mean, a lot of people think their content is linear, but when they actually stop and look at it and say, well, hang on a minute, I do a section around, you know, better slides, and that's just normally 3 hours, and there are 16 sections in it. I can jump from my first slide, which says, what do you want to talk about? Okay, you want to talk about slides. Here's a 16 area of slides. Okay, you're interested making amazing animations, and I can drop down into that. And if you think about it, each one of those are little silos of learning. And what you really want to do is ideally, you know, people 10, 20, 30 rule of presenting, people remember 20, you know, 10 slides delivered in 20 minutes with no font size less than 30. Thank you, Guy Kawasaki. So slide, you know, 20 minutes, you want to be presenting in 20 minute silos and then have some sort of media change or some sort of interaction, something that's going on. It's amazing because one of my most voted on sections in my 400 slides is take a break or play a game. And I have sort of 15 different games down the end of my presentation, which I can jump to at any point. And I mean, I've seen some crazy stuff over the years and I've picked up and learned from other people. But, you know, watching a room full of 400 people play rock, paper, scissors and ending up with two winners is just awesome fun. And I know that stuff's out there. It just has to be appropriate.
Yeah.
A lot of it. And, you know, the Middle East was quite a conservative audience. And so we were all about was engaging everyone whilst embarrassing no one. That was our mantra over the years. And that's really important. And audiences are very clever. You ask them to use Slido on their phone, they think, oh, maybe you're going to be able to track me and work out what I'm going to say. So, you know, we're seeing tools like these types of tools, little audience clickers starting to come back in. Because when an audience member picks this up, they know that it's absolutely anonymous and they're going to give a really honest response to something like that. So you've got to bear that in mind. If you're using something like Catchbox, the vocal minority will jump up and will jump right into it. But it's a case of just getting comfortable with tools like Logitech Spotlight, using Zoom Summary, will allow you to completely be interactive, walk around the room and be able to dynamically move through your slides really easily.
I love it. It's so refreshing. It's so great. We'll put a link to all of that in the show notes, by the way, a lot of those tools, the tech tools that you spoke about. Logitech Spotlight, can you just share a bit more about that as a tool?
Yeah. So Spotlight itself is a Bluetooth, or it's got a USB port you can plug into your computer, but it's another type of presenter remote control. And for those that are watching on video, I'm holding one up here and it's got one big button on it that allows you to move forward as you normally would, yeah? It also controls your mouse, yeah? So when I click and hold the top button, it creates a spotlight on the screen, which is really useful if you've got multiple screens or TV screens, as we're using more and more of, you know, and it creates a spot, but it also allows me to control the mouse. So I'm gyroscopically controlling the mouse, and I can send the mouse off to my Zoom slide, my summary Zoom slide, and then I can choose from the block of options that I have there, and I can then jump down through it. So as a presenter or facilitator, I'm moving around the room and I've got complete control of my computer. I'm not back at my computer trying to click on things or trying to use hyperlinks. I can do everything from Spotlight and I can just walk around the room. I can even control the volume of videos that I've got during the presentation. So it cuts a tie completely. And we are pushing Logitech to say, hey, Mr. Logitech, we are out here. This is an awesome use of your tool. It's not just as simple as a presenter remote control. By tying it together with Summary Zoom for PowerPoint, you are going to change the way people meet. You're going to change the way people engage and the way people actually use the tool. So pushing them to kind of, you know, let's tell this story of how we can really use it to really create impact in a meeting or a conference.
Yeah, please just start an online petition for Mr. Logitech. And if you're listening, we'll have a link to that in the show notes if it ever gets up and running. But it's funny because I actually parked my clicker. Like, it's been packed away with all of my in-person facilitation stuff. I've just been directing my Zoom calls with like the down button or a mouse. But I think, oh my gosh, of course, I can bring it back, get the spotlight tool working, play around with it to add that impact and to really highlight key phrases and move around. That's awesome. So that's like part of the delivery in a cool way, a real novel way that we can bring in something that I talk about, the unpredictability, into our workshops and presentations. Let's talk about meeting architecture. I know that's something that you're very passionate about. You've got some ideas on way that we can improve these things. I mean, there's probably some awful stats on meetings and the loss of productivity and all of that. What are your thoughts on architecture?
Well, architecture, I mean, look, first and foremost, some people haven't heard of meeting architecture, but I started off, and I am now a presentologist. That's essentially what people call me. But hand in hand with that is an eventologist or a meetingologist. And by the way, these are all portmanteaus, which are joining two words together, like smog or fog, or, you know, mixing words together. The other one that I love is presentainer. So as a facilitator, maybe you need to be a facilitator, facilitator. I love that.
I said facilitator and facilitator.
Yeah,
because it's like the mix of content expert, but then engagement expert. Yeah,
we've got edutainment. I mean, there's too many of them, isn't there? But what are we trying to do? We're trying to create a lean forward presentation, not a fall asleep presentation. I mean, like, I used to work in theatre in Windsor Theatre Royal in the UK, and I used to look out through a little peephole, and I would see that half the audience were asleep. It never ceased to amaze me that people used to fall asleep during a brilliant play. So, you know, how do we get people more engaged? I've seen people knitting in conferences. I've seen slide grabbers, people coming in just to slide grab and not really doing anything. I've seen hostage takers, which are presenters who are going to read all of their slides. So meeting architecture breaks that mold. And I tried to, over the years, put together sort of a package of 12 of them, my favorite architecture that kind of changes a meeting. So what do we mean by that? Let's pick on a couple of examples. So you've heard of Pecha Kucha, for example?
Yeah.
Pecha Kucha is 20 slides delivered 20 seconds per slide. Now, at the Arabian Travel Market in Dubai, in a big conference venue, in a trade show, there's different shows going on and different meetings going on, but an absolute packed corner with 150 people in it was the Arabian Travel Market Pecha Kucha show, which I moderated and facilitated. And why did that work so well? It was packed because we had a win-win situation. The audience could win a prize, and it was a good prize. It was a trip to the Maldives, but the audience were also scoring the presenters, with the keypad. So they were giving them a feedback on which of the four presenters were actually the best and matched up to Pecha Kucha the best. And people loved the fact that it was just 6 minutes and 40 seconds, 20 slides, 20 seconds. You know, it was a formula that worked for everybody. People could just come in, they knew they were just going to watch 6 minute presentations, because the big fear people have coming into a meeting is this going to go on all day? Am I going to be, you know, is my time going to be encapsulated and kind of taken over? So it's really just a case of, let's try to use different formats that really work. So Pecha Kucha is a good example. And game show is another awesome example. We grew a company's sales by 80% through gamification.
Wow.
Essentially, their skincare company, Bioderma, throughout the Middle East. And they came to us with the concept of, can we have a quiz instead of a meeting? And I was like, of course you can. Quizzes are fundamental to it. So gamification absolutely pays to play. I mean, if you get audiences playing a game, they will fundamentally, A, their memory retention will go through the roof, as will the engagement level. Now, how can you do that? Well, you can do it very simply. You discuss a subject and then you ask them a question afterwards and say, what I just discussed, which is the right answer, you know, of A, B, C, D. And you could do that very simply with something like free, like Kahoot, K-A-H-O-O-T. You can create a little Kahoot and have a quiz, or you could use Slido and create a quiz example in there, Poll Everywhere. You could create a quiz in there. But again, if you want to try and engage everybody in the room and you want to show who was the fastest finger, for example, then using keypads or something like that in an environment where you're meeting live works beautifully, you know, and you get everyone engaged. So essentially, when people felt that they were coming to a meeting, a training meeting, they turned up and we spent a huge amount of money on the production value of the whole thing. So it felt like you were at a TV show, you know, it felt like the lighting, the sound, the whole thing. It was a medical training event, but it felt like a TV show or a game show. And, you know, people won prizes to go ice skating and cinema tickets. There weren't huge prizes, but then the prizes built up into a huge prize. And this actually became a championship, became known as the Pharma Games throughout the Middle East. And pharmacists would send three and they would be studying for weeks beforehand, learning all the different terminologies. And so all of the technology, one of the fun things about the whole thing was that we had a situation where the presenter on stage, not me, another guy we brought in, he didn't know all of the medical terms. So we had to have sort of a Mr. Babbage, which was kind of like a voice that appeared in the event or like something.
And the voice of God. Yeah.
It was just so much fun. And by the way, you're not allowed to call it the voice of God in the Middle East. So it was a computer noise who kind of came in, and we computerized one of the marketing manager's voices who would come in live and kind of say, that is wrong or that is right. You know what I mean? But the absolute experience of that was amazing. So, I mean, like, I've done stuff like Pfizer for Viagra. We did the Viagra game show, a road show throughout the Middle East. Can you believe it or not? So which one of these great four images, that sort of thing. So, I mean, for pharmacists, it was just crazy. So, you know, turning things into more fun, engaging things is very engaging for the audience. So try to consider gamification in whatever you're doing. You could have a debate. I mean, one of the most fun ways of running an event is to have a debate. And you can do it without any technology, just by asking people to move from one side of the room to the other to show, have they changed their mind? So, you know, split the room up in two. When we use keypads, we're generally asking people to vote, are you for or against the motion at the start? We then run the training, or we run the actual debate, and then people vote afterwards. Are you now for or against the motion? And we look at the learning shift, the shift as it goes, with a comparative analysis slide. And that's absolutely amazing, because the audience get to see, oh, wow, you know, 34% of us shifted our view on it. And doctors and medical training have been doing that for many years, but let's bring it into other lines of business. So let's do it at a finance conference. You know, why not? I mean, those are some of the things. The other things I saw work really well are hard talk interviews, like a head-to-head interview. So have an interview with two people where the interview is really kind of, it's just setting a scene up, for example, where the CFO and the CIO are sitting having a drink at New Year's Eve party, and they're talking about the past year, how it's been great, but actually we're in the past year. So they're there for
future casting
and creating a kind of a scene, you know, sort of, and you've got a bit of background music going on. Any sort of drama, anything that you can do that's got dramatic ability to it will just make people go, wow. I mean, at a recent Sins event in over down in Dunedin, they brought in some actors. We were talking about how we interact with the millennials, and, you know, the actors got changed, went out of the room and got changed, but every once in a while they'd come in and, you know, the light would suddenly, it would interrupt the presenter, the light would suddenly change onto these two people, and it'd be a fight between a millennial and his mother, and they'd be talking about it, and the engagement level was just huge, absolutely huge. People were just like, what's going to happen next? So there are some famous examples of this, the famous spinning beach ball of death presentation, if you look that up on TED, where they just had a pointless most break in the whole thing, where suddenly this guy was going to come on and give a presentation about something quite technical, and this presentation stopped, and then all of a sudden, you know, people started coming out dancing, and it was just purely to break up and have a bit of fun. And I think people get too serious about it. So, you know, the things that people love playing when we're doing things is, you know, just don't be afraid to inject some sort of gamification and humor into an ordinary event, because people get very stuck in the norm. If you use the default programming, you're going to get the default reaction. And that's sometimes feels safe, but you've got to be brave here. You've got to try something different. When I teach kids, they don't know about all this stuff. So they just try something different. So they just come in. I mean, for example, if I ask you now to imagine a picture of a flying horse, most people in their mind will see a horse with wings, sort of flying around. But when I ask my kids to draw a picture of a flying horse, they draw a picture of a horse in a spacecraft that's been abducted by UFOs, you know what I mean? As humans, we kind of like, don't you find that we kind of conform? And if you asked your kids to organize your next conference, what would they do? They'd say, let's have a game show, or let's have some fun, you know, let's make a talent show out of it, you know, or have some fun. So there's so many different ways. I mean, again, and I met these types of people in the Middle East. They were incredibly brave and had the money to do it. Like, one last story, confession chair was one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Confession chair.
Now, confession chair is a big chair in the middle of the stage. And the whole idea here is to bring the C-suite people down to flatten the pyramid in the organization, right? And we have very tall pyramids sometimes around the Middle East. So to flatten it, what they did, the girls in marketing decided that we'd put a chair on the stage and the audience would be asked a question. So here is our CEO sitting. They would have to vote one of the C-suite people into the chair, and he would sit in the chair, or she would sit in the chair, and the audience would say, right, here is the question that we are going to ask him. Which of these questions? So what his mother called him, for example, or what her mother called her, right? Okay. So what was her baby name? You know what I mean? And I don't know, which one of these pictures up on the screen is the CEO, you know, this sort of thing, or which one is him, you know? Ah. And they came up with that themselves. They came to us. We didn't program that. This was people wanting to do something different. And I mean, like, some extreme examples over the years, L'Oreal doing a quiz show as a pitch to their client. Imagine going in, you know, with a normal pitch concept.
Yes.
And then, but the whole thing is now a quiz, you know, which one of these smells is sandalwood, for example. And then the whole aim of it is ultimately to get people to understand that that's what they're providing. So you have to be brave if you're going to do any of this. And sometimes it takes a facilitator or a meeting architect like us to come in and say, what outcomes do you want? This is how you can do it. And what's the right technology? For a company with Kiwi Wealth, we decided to use these. Why? Because everyone in the room was a boomer. So there was no point in giving out and asking him to download an app. They don't have the iTunes password or whatever it is. So, you know, use the technology that's going to work. And simple is not stupid. Go with something simple, is my experience.
So
those are a few meeting architecture ideas. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But brilliant. Absolutely. Each one of those we could really dive into. I love the confession chair as an idea and the questions and just absolutely like lowering the status and humanizing the people in these roles. So powerful. I've taken so many notes. I love the debate idea. There's the Melbourne Comedy Festival in Australia. They do something every year. It's called The Great Debate. And it's just funny. So you get like these experts and they're debating over something. And I love, like, that's such a great thing to incorporate as well into your presentations. Gosh, yeah. So many awesome ideas. Yeah.
Corporate culture can be awful. And I'm out of corporate culture for so long. So they'll come to me and say, what's the most fun thing you've seen? And I'll say, okay, I can't use the F word, but let's call it stuff up nights. Okay. So let's have a stuff up meeting where everybody comes in the room and they tell us all the worst stuff up they've ever made at work. You know, I mean, like, imagine the learning that people get out of listening to other people tell their worst stuff ups. I mean, that's way more than trying to convince people of the right way to do things.
Yes.
Let's talk about the stuff ups, you know. So I love stuff ups.
I love stuff ups as well. There's something I use called SIFT. It's an acronym. So S stands for stuff ups. Stuff ups, insights, first times, and transformations.
Great,
but the stuff ups, people always laugh. They're kind of off guard because they don't expect us to talk about stuff ups, right? Like, everything you're talking about just really brings into the philosophy that I talk about on the show. So it's absolutely perfect. And thank you for being so open with sharing your ideas as well. A lot of stuff you said you got inspiration from TV broadcasting. That's something that I've taken away with virtual events is like you watch a TV show, the scene changes, the camera angles change like every few seconds. So obviously I can't do that in my home studio. Where do you get these ideas and sources of inspiration? Is it just that, like you said, you talk to your kids or you see something that's fun on the TV and it engages you? Like, where's your source of inspiration?
For example, the content idea came from BBC Outside Source. So on the BBC, they brought up a program that went on at lunchtimes, which was traditionally a pretty boring time in the day, but it grew dramatically. And he had a big screen behind him, which he could touch on different areas and he could interactively tell you the news, you know? So if stuff came through, and I thought, you know, there has to be a way to do that in terms of, you know, live presentations, but in PowerPoint, you know, how do we make PowerPoint interactive? You know what I mean? We must be a way to do that. So by then playing with it and finding ways to do it, and we're evolving as time goes on. I mean, ultimately, I feel that, you know, face recognition, certainly on Zoom calls or even in audiences, and I've got some brave customers like JLL. I don't know if you've heard of Jones Lang LaSalle. Very, very brave crowd of people in Dubai. I mean, willing to try and stand out and be completely different in terms of how they run a meeting. I've worked with those clients over the years and they've come to me and said, look, let's do something different. You know, so Dubai Air Navigation, you know, they've got to train all of the air traffic controllers over, you know, four different meetings. We can't obviously have them in one meeting because all the planes wouldn't be in the sky. So they basically bring them all in 100 at a time, but they come up, you know, and they're Kiwi who run that, you know, and they want to get them all kind of, let's get them all engaged, you know. So Pete, the CEO, came to us and said, we need an image of a bus going down the road and all the people on the bus, and I'm the Kiwi and I'm going to roll it over. And then we would live create that for them, because storytelling and turning messages into stories is really one of the key things that you got to think about. If you think about it, stories are just data with a soul. Yeah. So, you know, we've got too much data. And if knowledge is knowing that tomatoes are fruit, then wisdom is knowing not put it in a fruit salad. Yeah. So how do we get rid of all of the knowledge that's there and try and create some wisdom and really create some engagement? And that's where, by working with the clients over the years and saying, you know, then come to us and say, no, we don't want to do that. We want to do something different. And we've got the budget to do it, but what's the idea, you know? And then coming up with a proposal, you know, well, let's break in the room. Let's not break out of the room. Why do we always break out of the room? Let's break in the room. Yeah, let's stay in the room and go into four different areas. And I've done a couple of those over the years, and they're absolutely great fun. You know, what I love about break in the room is that the audience, people are really cheeky, you know. They know that you're going to be presenting in this area, but they also want to listen to this person over here. So they sit in another area, but listen to you and channel hop. And the most extreme case we did of that was a massive wide, 100-meter wide screen with six presenters with picture in pictures on it. And the whole audience, 700 people, all sat in the stayed in the same place, and you could just channel hop between all six of the presenters.
So, cool.
So I'm sorry, presenters and facilitators, you know, the audiences are coming to get you. You've either got to change or you're going to get left behind in terms of this, because it's generational. Look at the kids. Look at what kids are doing. Kids are sitting there, they're engaging, they're tapping as they're going on, they're talking to you while they're engaging. So, you know, the millennials and Gen Zs that are coming through, they absolutely want to do this. They want to get engaged, and they don't want you just, you know, piling it on them, you know, and piling information on them. It's going to be a case of an engagement, and they want to work together. They want to break out. So, you know, in Zoom, one of the most engaging things that we see is people having a breakout, but having a real point to a breakout, you know. So go away with Slido, come up with five different things, send them into the Slido screen. Then we all come back together again. We upvote those, for example, and we upvote which is the most important. So reaching a quick consensus by using breakouts, really powerful if you put it together. So to answer your question, it's really just experience of being put in the pointy end of it over the years and having to come up with alternative ideas is where we've come up with them over the years. And yeah, I've got them all shared on one webpage, and I'll make sure you get those for the show notes, but please take them and run with them or create your own. That's what I'd urge your listeners to do, is just come up with your own ideas. Look at the world that's out there. Look at the Wiggles. Surely the Wiggles, there's an idea you can nick from the Wiggles, isn't there?
Absolutely. Well, even like the other day, I was listening to a podcast with Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V, and he just plays this game. It's like, it's called Overrated and Underrated. So they'll bring things up like charcuterie board. And then he goes, underrated because of this reason. And I thought you could just play that, like, again, people vote. You could throw things in like emails, underrated, overrated, and people talk about it. And it's just an inspiration from a podcast. Anything that I sort of laugh at or I find interesting, I then will just take and run with it. And I think what you're doing today is just sharing these ideas and people can add on things, like much like improv, right? You hear an idea, then you add something onto it. So it's genius.
Yeah, great. There's so many different ideas as we go along. And I think that some audiences, as we call it, like crowdsourcing, imagine crowdsourcing the whole content. That's the ultimate sort of, imagine crowdsourcing a whole conference. I mean, like a whole conference. So who do you want to speak about? What do you want them to speak about? So communicating with your audience and getting people engaged is one of the first things that needs to happen. The more that you give them the options, can you imagine if I've said that I want Leanne Hughes to talk about this at this particular time, can you imagine I'm not going to turn up? I'm absolutely going to turn up. So there are awesome ways that we're starting to see people switching on to the whole concept of let's crowdsource the whole idea and find out what people really want from it and what they want to engage. But then while the person's up there, if you've not been up there and not tried that engagement, what do you want to talk about next? It's a scary question to ask an audience. Yeah. So what we do is we give them the tools to vote on that. You know, so we say, here are the 12 things I can talk about. What's most important? And then the audience vote and you immediately get a feedback from them. And the thing is to use a tool that will create the audience as almost a single entity. So you're getting their group opinion, but getting everyone engaged is really important to do that. Yeah.
Awesome. Johnny, we need this one pager. We need to get people, like, I think you're talking to the converted here. Everyone that's listening to the show, they have a passion for doing things differently and for new ideas. And that's absolutely what you've delivered and beyond in this conversation today. If they'd love to reach out to you and find out more about the work that you do, where can we send them?
Just Google Audience Alive. I'm pretty unique online. So just Audience Alive. But I'm on LinkedIn and I love connecting with people on LinkedIn and chatting. And you know, it's really cool to sort of connect with a group of people. And I actually didn't know you guys existed. So I'm really excited. I've been looking at the Facebook page and I've been like, wow, there's an actual real group of people. I've really only been dealing with the Belgians who are the meeting architecture people, but it's great to have somebody down this end of the world as well and a growing sort of trend and a growing tribe of people who want to do things differently when people get together. Because at the end of the day, interaction is the difference between a monologue and a dialogue. And we just have to find a way to really connect with audiences. And I suppose what we want to do is we want people to walk out going, wow, that is the best thing I've ever seen. It's just amazing. And it doesn't have to be just about money and throwing money at things. It's how you treat the people and how you engage them that's really important.
Oh my gosh. So like here, high five, totally resonate with you on that. Hopefully one day we can just crowdsource an APAC conference together, like just no agenda, just rock up. And I don't know what that would look like. Be great to work with you on that. Johnny, thank you so much for your time today.
Awesome, Leanne. It's been great to chat to you and look forward to connecting with you.
Hey, thanks so much for sticking around. You've reached the end of another episode of the First Time Facilitator podcast. Connect with the show at firsttimefacilitator.com or follow me on Instagram at Leanne Hughes to find out what I'm up to during the week. If you enjoyed this episode, please feel free to share it with someone who will also appreciate the insight and make it easier for yourself and subscribe to the show in your podcast player of choice. Thank you so much for listening and chat to you next week.